All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Coming up on episode 352 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Nissan Z Nismo, the Colorado ZR2 Bison, the Lexus TX 550H Plus, drive the Chevy Equinox EV for the first time, and check out the Jeep Wagoneer S and Cadillac Optic. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 352 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual-Samich from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakeland from CarBuzz.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
Ooh, that sounds fancy.
They're going to be, I don't know if any of them listen to this, but they're probably like, don't call it international.
You'll know on Monday.
It's a very serious organization.
It is. It's a very, we keep people safe. Our whole deal is trustworthiness and safety and like helping everyone, you know, do the thing they do in a very safe manner. And I'm over here, international.
Well, I'm pretty sure Sebastian wouldn't mind. I think he'd be fine with it. And I'm sure, you know, Bill Visnick, who's no long, you know, he recently left SAE. You know, he'd be fine with it. You know, that yeah, so you're okay.
Bill would be fine. Of course, neither of them like control like what I do.
All right. Well, I'll start today. Last few days, I've been driving the 2024 Nissan Z Nismo, and I actually really like the regular Z, the standard Z, and the Z Performance. You know, it's not perfect, but I think it's a really good sports car, and especially even in the base trim, it's actually pretty reasonably priced, and probably the closest direct competitor that it's got in the marketplace is the Supra, the Toyota Supra. And it is substantially cheaper than the Supra. And frankly, I would take the Z over the Supra.
Goodness.
I didn't even think about that. Cause I would take the BRZ over the Z.
Yeah. I mean, I would
just
probably,
I feel like it's, but I'm happy anytime there's an enthusiast car on the market that gets people excited. Yeah. It's manual, it's rear-wheel drive, it's fun to drive. I like the car a lot. I especially liked the fact that Nissan put it out because they're, they've been trying to rebuild. They kind of didn't have to do this because we gotta focus on the thing. We gotta focus on the small SUVs, and then they brought the Z back. So I'm very happy about that.
And I really like the design of the Z. The Z Sport and the Z Performance. I really like driving those. You know, I think they've got a, they're really nicely balanced. You know, they've got 400 horsepower. It's not too much, not too little. They're great, and they're actually surprisingly practical. You can put a couple of roller bags in the back, in the cargo area under the rear hatch. So you can get away for a weekend road trip with your partner, and put your stuff in the back. So
it's your dog.
Or your dog, yes. whatever.
Your dog.
And so, I actually really like the Z, and I was really looking forward to driving the Nismo. And then I drove it.
Oh.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
So, for the Nismo, Nismo, for those not aware, is the racing performance division of Nissan. So they handle a lot of the motorsports programs for Nissan. And, they've done Nismo versions of a lot of Nissan vehicles over the years, and they're usually pretty good. For the Z Nismo, they bumped up the power a little bit, so it's 420 horsepower instead of 400 horsepower. So it's fine. It's not like it really needed it, but a little bit of extra is nice.
A little something.
It's got bigger brakes. Which is also always a good thing. I'd never say no thanks to bigger brakes. 15-inch front rotors, Akebono four-piston calipers in the front, two piston calipers in the rear. So good brakes is always an important thing in any car, but especially a performance car. And then the thing that they did that I don't like is the way they tune the suspension. If you want a Z as a track car to take to use primarily as a track car to take to the track, get the Nismo. It's fantastic for that. You know, if the pavement is smooth, it's really good. You know, it comes on these high performance Dunlop tires. It does. The Nismo only comes with an automatic transmission with paddle shift. It's a 9-speed automatic. That's fine. You know, I mean, I would prefer to have it with a manual, but it's fine. But the suspension setup on this thing for real world driving, especially in a place like Michigan, is not good. And the thing is, it's not like, you know, it's stiff like you would expect a performance car to be. You know, I mean, it's fairly tightly sprung. But you know, and I don't mind in a performance car, you know, you hit a frost heave or something and you're going to feel that. That's not a problem. But the way this thing is set up with the springs and the dampers, you know, for anybody that's that watches any Formula One in 2022, when they went to the current rule set for aerodynamics, and they went back to ground effects cars in 2022. A lot of the cars, when they went to those new rules, had a problem with what they referred to at the time as porpoising or bouncing. And the cars would get into this vertical bouncing situation. And it was making the drivers crazy. I mean, some drivers were coming off, out of the car after a practice session or a race with like severe headaches and stuff because the cars were doing this bouncing. And in that case, it was
like once it starts,
it was an aerodynamic issue because the bodies were generating so much downforce. It was pulling the car down towards the ground, and then it would get into an aerodynamic stall situation. It was so stiffly sprung that it would bounce back up, and then it would start, the aero would start pulling it back down again, and it would get into this like 1 hertz or one and a half hertz frequency oscillation, vertical oscillation, which was really uncomfortable for drivers.
But a sweet, sweet baseline.
Yeah. And So the Nismo here, there's some particular roads here around Southeast Michigan here, some stretches of I-94 in particular that are paved in concrete. And when you look at them, there's no potholes. You look at them, they look nice and smooth. And most cars, you can drive across them and it's just fine. You'll never even notice a problem. But there are certain cars, including the Nismo, the Z Nismo, and previously the Ford Focus RS, that the way that the springs and shocks were set up, it would, there's actually a little bit of a wave in the road. So it's like a sinusoidal oscillation in the road. So you can't,
that was the most engineering thing I've heard you say in front, sinusoidal oscillation. Okay, Sam.
This looks like a sine wave.
I'll get one of my synths out. We'll
That was awesome.
It's not something you'll see just looking at the road.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it looks smooth. And in, like I say, in 99% of vehicles, it's fine. You won't even feel it. But in certain cars, like the Z Nismo and the Ford Focus RS, it's at the same frequency. You know, when you're driving at highway speeds, you know, 70 to 80 miles an hour, it just starts bouncing, vertically bouncing. And driving back from Detroit last night, you know, went to the Detroit Grand Prix last night and then had dinner with some other media and analysts and some folks from Honda. And driving back along this stretch of 94, it's like my eyes, you know, it's like I was bouncing up and down, you know, at about 1 hertz. And it was so, so uncomfortable, and it just did not. It felt terrible. I hated it.
Like riding a horse.
Yeah, but worse, you know, because with a horse,
at least with a horse, kind of adjust it. You have the whole body of the horse and yourself to sort of as a shock absorber. With this, yeah. It's so stiff that it's just like gong, 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 yeah. gong.
If you want a Z as for, to use as a track car, get the Nismo. If you want a Z to drive on a daily basis, just get the Z Performance. Save yourself $13,000. Get the Z Performance because it's the Nismo is not going to be that much quicker, and chances are, I've driven the Z Performance around here before. Never had that issue with the Z Performance. It's just with the Nismo. And, I know this is not the only place, when I had the Focus RS, there were other places where I also experienced the same thing, like driving. I had to drive to Kentucky with it one time and, had experienced the same thing on roads in Ohio and Kentucky and other places, which is, it's unfortunate, but that is the situation. So I was not thrilled with the Nismo Z. What are some of the other things? Some of the other things they added, a front strut tower brace, stiffen things up there, which is usually a good thing. Mechanical limited slip diff.
Usually a good thing.
Yeah. The 19 inch lightweight forged aluminum wheels. The tires, are almost like racing slicks. They're really road, track tires. They're not really meant for road use. The overall price tag on this thing came to, the options on it, the base price was $64,990, and the options on it were premium paint for $12,95, which was this gray,
gray.
I like the shape of the Z, but I gotta say,
gray.
This stealth gray. Not something I'd pay $1,300 extra for.
I had the blue when I had it. I'm like, oh, this is nice.
Get the red, save yourself, $1,300 and get the red. It looks a lot better. A lot more interesting to look at. It also had $410 floor mats and $500 illuminated kick plate. The grand total came to $68,290. Shall we take guesses on the destination charge?
$1,295.
Now you got your math.
$895.
Ooh, Robbie wins. You weren't here last week. We had a suggestion from a listener about the rules for the destination charge game.
Yeah.
Rather than using Price is Right rules where, closest without going over wins, because, whoever goes first or last kind of has an advantage.
Right.
Whoever goes last has an advantage. So, we changed it to just whoever's closest overall.
My chances got better. Okay.
wait. Did you say $12.95, Robbie?
I said $12.95. Yeah. You said $8.95.
Oh, okay. So actually, it was a tie then because you were both $200 off. It was $1,095.
Yay, we're both winners.
Okay. Losing or just winning.
We're both winners.
So that's the
take that. Take that, that's, guidance counselor.
That's the Nissan Z Nismo.
What do you know, guidance? Bah!
Guidance. You're never going to amount to nothing. Ha ha. What are you going to do now, buddy?
All right, Nicole, your turn.
Okay, I had a couple of cars this week. I'm going to start with the one I'm like on a backlog of cars. I had one that was mine, and then I had one while we were actually in Milwaukee a couple of weeks ago. That I don't believe I have talked about yet. I had the Lexus Texas, Lexus Texas. I had the Lexus Texas, which I can't help it. Every time I see Lexus TX, that's what it is. I don't care what
they
want to call
Texas.
It.
They doesn't.
I know. I don't know if they expected the TX, us to not call
Texas.
It that.
Yeah.
What?
Lexus Texas.
TX is Texas.
TX is Texas.
And
so if you thought
and it's
we
a big
were
Lexus.
Call it something else, then shame on you. You should have known it was going to be the Lexus Texas. I have a Lexus Texas 550H, which is the plug-in hybrid version of the Lexus
Texas. H+.
Oh, H plus. You're correct. I'm sorry. I didn't quite write. All wheel drive actually was also a 550 H plus all wheel drive was technically across the top of my Monroney. So I had this for a weekend where I was down across visiting Rose.
Over.
Yeah. Over sideways. My daughter graduated from college. So I said I needed a vehicle that could potentially haul around a bunch of family. And they gave me this. Guess what? Worked perfectly. Like truly as a vehicle for hauling people around, because we had her friends in the car. We had family in the car. We had all sorts of stuff in the car. This car with two people in the captain's chairs can hold a phenomenal number of balloons. I would say we should stop measuring things in how many golf clubs you can put inside and measure balloons, because I think we had 24 balloons and then a couple that were shaped like giant like graduation caps. And people in the back seat, and they weren't being overwhelmed by the balloons. So there's my new storage measurement for the cargo area in a car. I really like driving this around. And truly, when you're the roads, the highways in that area, they have some very fast highways, but they're surprisingly sharp. Like there's a lot of there's rather tight cornering on these highways that are like 5 or 6 cars. But then the condition of the actual road surfaces is garbage. So you're trying to take these corners relatively quickly at highway speeds. They're sort of swoopy and tight. There's a lot of traffic. And the pavement, depending on the car, can toss you around a little bit because it's so broken and uneven. This handled really well. Like there are a couple of times I thought to myself, I'm going to have to back off a little bit because this road is looking terrible. And you don't. So it's for a big vehicle, I liked driving this. And just having a bunch of people inside, it is perfect for that. Like I know that you buy a big SUV because you have family. Presumably you're carrying them around, you have cargo and stuff, but man, where this thing excels is just being super comfy for people. Like everybody who got inside of it's the same thing. This is gorgeous. This is comfortable. I had people like zonking out and dozing in the back seat, and they weren't little children. They were grown adults, just like time to take a nap because they were so comfy. The thing that I thought was funny was, and they have the cup holders. You guys have both driven this, right? They have these cup holders that
I've driven the TX. I've driven the Grand Highlander, which
you
is
can take the cup holder squares out, like they're little square pods that you can take out. And I was trying to, we bought my daughter a bottle of champagne. It was not being drunk in the car. We were trying to find a spot to put it because it had a bow on it and we couldn't. And if you pop the cup holder out, it's a perfect size to put a bottle of champagne right in there and hold it until you get to your final destination there. So, you know, fun facts. So I truly enjoyed driving this. And I thought, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's a luxury car. So it's not cheap. It's this one as equipped was $83,000. It's not cheap. And do you want to take destination guests since I have the Monroney right in front of me right this very minute?
Oh,
$995.
Would you say $995?
$1,295. Sam? Yes.
$1,295. Robbie, you win. You are off by $55. It was $1,350.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's pretty high. So
you got to move the entire state of Texas to get that thing anywhere.
Yeah.
It's very long.
When you look at what you're getting for the 83, like Lexus truly is a luxury vehicle. You have a pretty powerful engine. I think it's a 404 net system horsepower in there. You can tow up to 5,000 pounds with it. You've got leather trims. You've got like 10-way power adjustable seats. There's a 14-inch infotainment. There's wireless smartphone connectivity. You know, there's big burly 22-inch wheels on the outside that look fantastic. It has pretty much all of the bells and whistles that you would want in a luxury SUV. And this is the top trim. There's quite a few trims and there's different, you know, powertrains for this. This is the top of the heap, most expensive one. So you can get a less expensive Lexus Texas if you want. I think the least expensive one. So the base on this is on this 550H plus luxury all-wheel drive is 78050. The base on just the 350, which is the base one, is $55,000. So you're looking at it like over $20,000 spread there, depending on exactly what you want for a vehicle. If you're looking for a luxury car, though, that really is just nice to drive, comfortable, quiet, has all the things that you want a luxury car to have and expect it to have, this does it. I mean, even the sound system, it has this 21 speaker surround sound system that they were blasting at ridiculous levels. And it was fantastic. It was exactly what you would want. Like, I really thought of it. I'm like, gosh, for this particular instance where I had a bunch of people to drive around, there was family, it was a lot of like short distances here and there, people in and out of the car. It was perfect for someone has, I'm thinking if you had like kids or teenagers or somebody you're just driving around a lot, it's perfect as a people carrier. Like if I choose between a minivan or this SUV, I'm like, this SUV is just so nice. I loved it. I really liked it.
Assuming you can afford it.
Assuming you can afford $83,000. Now, see, that's the thing. You have to be looking for a luxury car. Like if you have to be in luxury car pricing and luxury car budget or lack thereof, because you're buying a luxury car, if you can afford to spend $83,000. If I had $83,000 and I was looking to get a luxury vehicle and had the whole family and wanted it to feel, have all the sort of things you want for your family, the cargo, the comfort, the features, I wouldn't hesitate to buy this. I thought it was really nice. And because I really enjoyed how it drove. I really liked how it drove. I wasn't sure how nice it would be when you really had a bunch of people in there. You're driving in roads you don't know that aren't in the best condition at high speeds and stuff. It was a really nice, sort of relaxing car to drive.
I assume, you know, you didn't have a chance to plug it in and, you know, evaluate how far you could actually go on electricity.
I did not, because there was no, in the places that we went, there was literally no place to plug in. There was no place at the hotel we stayed at, no charging, because it was right downtown and they didn't have anything.
It's very weird when they give you a plug-in hybrid for a rental car, because you're going somewhere. Typically, you're not home.
Well, this was a vehicle loan.
I know this is a vehicle loan, but I've gotten rental cars that are plug-in hybrids, and I'm like, why did you give me this? Just give me a regular hybrid. Why did you pay for a plug-in hybrid? I'm not home. Where am I going to plug this in?
Well, and that's the thing. You have no idea the person that you just gave the plug-in hybrid to is a rental car. It's like, do you know where there are things to plug in near where you've rented this car that presumably you don't live? Probably don't. So there was no place near us. The hotel that we stayed at did not have anywhere where you could plug in. There wasn't a convenient charging. And we looked at the hotel that we normally stay at even, because I thought about that. And there was another one. Even they didn't have charging anywhere in the parking lot or nearby, so I wouldn't have been able to take advantage of it. There was literally nowhere to plug it in. So I thought, like, you know, for that was the drawback. Again, with that, if you have a plug-in vehicle and you're in your home turf, it's really easy. If you're not on your home turf, you might just be in a situation where it just never really works to plug it in.
That is the advantage of a plug-in hybrid. I mean, even if you don't have somewhere where you can plug it in,
you just drive it
like a hybrid. Yeah. It's not going to be quite as efficient as a non-plug-in hybrid, because you are carrying around a couple hundred pounds of extra battery. Right. But you know, it still works. And it's definitely going to be more efficient than just a straight up gas version of it.
Exactly.
And the EPA rating, you know, is 33 miles of electric range with the TX plug-in hybrid.
Right. Which is a pretty decent amount of, considering how big this is too. It's not like it's a small, sporty little vehicle to begin with. It's big. So it makes sense that it's not a huge amount of range. Yeah. So I was thumbs up. I like the Lexus Texas, and I kind of would just want to buy it so I can say, someone's like, what vehicle do you drive? I drive a Lexus Texas. And everyone will be thinking, what? So that was what I had while I was in Milwaukee as a loan for my daughter's graduation, worked beautifully a couple weeks back.
Smartphones have gotten way more expensive over the past decade, and all it takes is one impact on a hard floor to make you wish you had spent a few bucks to put a case on it. Going online without ExpressVPN is like not having a case for your phone, and it only costs a few dollars a month. Nicole, Robbie, and I travel a lot for our work, and we spend a lot of time in hotels, coffee shops, airplanes, and of course, the Delta Sky Club. Connecting to the Wi-Fi in any public places with shared Wi-Fi puts your data at risk, because bad actors could be intercepting what you send and using it to steal from you. It only takes some cheap hardware to intercept Wi-Fi data, and even a smart preteen can do it. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per victim selling personal information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops the bad guys by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN uses state-of-the-art encryption that would take a supercomputer up to a billion years to crack. I have ExpressVPN on all my devices, including a MacBook Pro, Windows laptops and desktops, and Android and iOS phones and laptops, or tablets. When I want to be secure, I just launch the app, click once to connect, and my data is secure. As I said, I travel a lot for my work, and I have to connect to countless public Wi-Fi networks in many countries. I have ExpressVPN on all my connected devices so that whoever else is on the same network can't see any of my data. That's important because I often have to check banks, credit card accounts, and transmit client data that might be sensitive, as well as filing articles on news that might be under embargo. ExpressVPN protects all of it, and I've been paying for my own account for years. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's expressvpn.com/wheelbearings, and you can get an extra 4 months for free. ExpressVPN.com/wheelbearings.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you know you can support Wheelbearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media.
What I had in my driveway was ridiculous. I had the Chevrolet Colorado ZR2 Bison. Ridiculous. It's, and the color, wait, I wrote it down because I didn't want to forget it. Nitro yellow. Have you seen nitro yes. yellow? Metallic, actually. You can see it from space. It is so bright. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous
that's,
color.
That's the color I had with just a regular, the Colorado Trail Boss.
Okay.
It's that nitro yellow.
It's,
I like that color.
It's very, you know, it suits the truck, like mm-hmm. especially when you have the Bison, the ZR2 Bison is all, there's so much stuff going on. You add that color, it's like, bam, here I am in my off-road truck. Get
well,
out of my
way. Well, you might as well just go all the way.
Right? So it was funny. I drove it to meet somebody and I parked it in her driveway and her neighbors came over and it was like the husband came over. He's like, what's that? And I'm looking out the window. The 12-year-old son's like, what's that? Like, would you like to see? I unlock it. They're crawling over it. They're like, this color's amazing. So I'm like, sort of appeals to men and 12-year-old boys. But I'm like, okay, I guess it's your target market. But it was, it suited the vehicle. I mean, it makes sense. This is an off-road truck. This is not for someone who's just like running to the grocery store. It has all these extra bits from American Expedition vehicles to make it an off-road. They say it's the most capable off-road mid-sized truck, blah, blah, blah. So it's basically an off-road truck. If you're either going off-road or you in your head, you're dreaming of going off-road. There is a list of the features they put on here, like the AEV stuff. There's a heavy duty winch. There's a rear bumper that's a special rear bumper, special rear special fender flares, 17-inch beadlock capable wheels with segment exclusive 35-inch Medtrain tires. There's skid plates. There's a better approach angle, departure angle, front and rear locking discs. I mean, this has all the stuff. This is an off-road truck. You're probably not going to, I mean, the nice thing is it's smaller. So if for some reason you did live in a city and you want to have a truck and you want to look like you go out into the country, this would do it. But it is very wide. It's very, very small because everything's so Bingham Burley. The only thing that I genuinely did not like on this one is the spare tire that they had on this. It's mounted in the truck bed. And it's mounted how they do it. Like, imagine you put it upright against the cab, but tip it slightly at an angle, but it's close to the cab of the truck. And it's off to the, like, passenger side, but it's big enough that it probably takes up 2/3 of your view when you look out the back of the truck. So you have this very narrow, it's funny because you're in this great big truck, right? But you have a window that makes you think you're driving a Miata. It's this tiny little view of window that you can see out in the back. So it kind of felt like, I mean, it looked super cool. And I guess if you really need that, you know, fancy spare tire mounted there to tell everybody you're doing off-road stuff and you might need it. But the in terms of it blocking your view, it was awful on the road. I actually had to sort of like cock the rear view mirror at a different angle. It was weirdly angled to make sure that when I looked, I wasn't looking at mostly tire and a tiny little bit of window. So I had a more window in there. So it looked amazing, but it takes a chunk of space in your bed. And it's just really hard to see around the way that's mounted when you look out the rear mirror. So I was not a fan of that, but super fun to drive. Surprisingly, not as bouncy as I anticipated. Like when you get little off-road trucks like this, you kind of expect that they're going to be those off-road suspensions that are fantastic when you're driving the dirt are not always quite so fantastic once you take them on a highway. And you get a lot of that sort of bounce and sway happening. I didn't find it was, I mean, it was definitely bouncy. You knew you were in an off-road truck, but it wasn't such, you know, I wasn't getting a headache. It wasn't like those drivers in the, you're talking about. No horrible ramifications for how this drove. But you do feel that it's an off-road vehicle. So I think if you were taking this, you know, if this is going to be your daily driver and your daily drive does not involve a dirt road, you're probably making a mistake unless you really love off-roading on the weekends. Because it feels like it wants to be off-road. It does not feel like it wants to be on the pavement. But I did enjoy driving it. It is nowhere near as expensive as ye olde Lexus Texas. There's a range of trims like this one too. So the base trim on this is $35, but that's the cheap version of this. The Bison gets up to, and I didn't have a Maroni, so I was trying to build my Bison. It's going to be at about it's going to be a little over $50,000, I think, when all is said and done. So I was trying to put the bits and pieces that I had on mine onto it.
I think you might have missed the Bison Edition package, which adds $11,700.
Oh, does it? Is it a separate pack? Oh, geez, Louise.
Yeah.
So we're looking at even more than that.
Yeah, it's about $61,000.
About $61,000. Okay, I was trying to build it, and it was like, as I'm building it on the side, I'm like, I'm missing something. Yeah, I was looking at the ZR2 package. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, well, the Bison is in it. You get the ZR2, and then you have to add the Bison edition to get all the AEV stuff, the skid plates.
It's still not cheap. It's not cheap. So, you know, it's not Lexus Texas expensive, but it's not exactly cheap eats.
But yeah, to be fair, none of these, you know, serious off-road trucks like the Tacoma TRD Pro,
right.
You know, the Ranger Raptor, you know, none of them are inexpensive.
Compared to like vehicles, you're absolutely right. Compared to this kind of vehicle, it is very fine for pricing. Compared to just a tiny little truck, outrageous. But if you're looking for this kind of off-road capability, this kind of package, the looks, the capability, this, all the pieces that they put into this, the pricing is really kind of in line with what you pay for this kind of stuff. It's not outrageous compared to competitors, I guess.
And the, you know, those 35-inch tires that come with the Bison package, you know, the reason why the spare is mounted in the bed is because it won't fit. It's literally too big to go in the usual place underneath the back end of the bed.
And which I totally get, but it just is, it is hard to see past it. It is hard.
Yeah,
to see.
Yeah.
It's a little inconvenient.
Mm-hmm. did the truck have the digital camera mirror?
I do not remember it having the digital camera mirror.
Okay. Cause I mean, at least if you have that, then.
But you know, I sometimes don't, I go back and forth on, sometimes I like to have a mirror. Like I don't want the digital camera mirror. I actually want
it. Right. But if your whole field of view is blocked off.
Yeah. You know, then but that I guess would be a way around it. But I still was not a fan of this giant tire.
Yeah.
whoever had it before me had done the same thing because it was funny. Because when I got in, I was like, why is this the rearview mirror like this? And I straightened it out. I'm like, oh, I put it right back.
Yeah. See, get whatever little bit of view, field of view you can.
Yeah, past the tiny little tire. Little snapshot around that giant tire. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's the ZR2 Bison.
Hey, did we do the pricing?
Oh, I did. Well, were trying. I didn't have a Monroney for this one, so I did not have it exact. But okay. I'm looking up destination right now. I don't know the destination.
$13.95. Just because of the big tire.
I'm going to guess $15.
You're saying $13.95. What are you saying, Sam?
$1,500.
Okay, let me look it up exactly, and I will tell you in a minute. Keep going. Continue with that.
It's just because of the big tire.
Yeah.
The big tire. That's what.
Yeah,
that's
they probably charge extra for delivery on the Bison, you know, because of all the extra weight. Because that sucker's not going to be lightweight. Because you've got those big tires, you've got that big spare, and skid then plates. All the the winch and all the skid plates, all the armor under there. You know, there's a whole bunch of skid plates in this thing. There's there's a transfer case skid plate, the steel front skid plate, the rear differential skid plate, the fuel tank skid plate. And then you've got the AEV front bumper or rear bumper and the front bumper with the winch and all the other stuff on there, the beadlock wheels.
I didn't even fully build it. And the destination, who said 15? Was that you,
that
Robbie?
Was me.
That was you. You win because $15.95. And I haven't built the full one that I had. So it's at least that much, if not more.
Wow. So yeah, you're closer.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how numbers work.
All right. So let's move on to some other stuff. Last week we talked about the Chevy Silverado EV that the RST that I got to drive, and you know I was not particularly enthusiastic about the Silverado RST. It's too heavy. It's too expensive. It does have great range, and the way GM's doing the, packaging the electric trucks, having the optional mid gate in there, that's actually really cool, but still, too big, too heavy. I also drove, as part of the same program, we got to drive the Equinox EV, which, as soon as they announced that a couple of years ago, at that time they were saying the starting price was going to be $30,000 before incentives. And, I immediately realized that is actually the far more important vehicle for GM, the far more important EV for GM than than the Silverado, because most people are not going to be able to afford that Silverado. And, as we've seen, the market for electric full-size pickups is maybe not as enthusiastic, not as big as some people thought for a while there. So the Equinox, the funny thing is when they were doing the presentation on the Equinox, the Chevy people insist on calling this thing a compact EV. And, just because vehicles called Equinox, we're now coming up on the fourth generation of the gasoline Equinox, they were compact crossovers. When they launched, they're not compact anymore. At least the EV is not a compact anymore. The Equinox EV is 7 inches longer than the new gas Equinox and 10 inches longer than the Toyota RAV4, the best-selling compact crossover in the U.S. market.
It is not tiny.
It's not tiny. It's not huge, but it's not a compact. It's a midsize.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just call it what it is.
Why do they want to call it a compact? Is that just a holdover that they want to?
I don't know. they couldn't give us a good explanation. So this is what we're calling it. So that's that. The Equinox EV is only a little over an inch shorter than the Blazer EV.
Wow.
So it's basically the same size as the Blazer.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's almost negligible. Yeah.
Yeah. It's slightly narrower too, which is a good thing. But on the plus side, it's very roomy inside. It has especially the back seat. is very, you know, there's a lot of legroom back there, and you got a good amount of cargo space in the back. Although it's not necessarily class leading. You know, review I did for the Utopian, I put in a table of all the dimensions of all the leading compact crossovers and EVs. And the Ioniq 5, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, has more room, more cargo room, more passenger room, even though it's shorter and smaller, you know, physically on the outside.
I just got one of those. But, that's why I'm excited.
Yeah. you know, it's still a good size. You know, it's not something I would complain about in terms of passenger volume. So you can carry five people in this thing, you know, quite comfortably. It's a two row. There's no front trunk, you know, because the Equinox, unlike the Blazer is set up primarily as a rear drive or all wheel drive. Equinox is set up primarily as a front wheel drive, and so they've got all of the power electronics and everything stacked on top of the motor. So it actually takes up most of the space under the hood. When you open it up, there's really not much space there to do a frunk. They're offering the Equinox EV in two powertrain configurations. The base setup has 213 horsepower motor driving the front wheels, and then the all-wheel drive, the e-all-wheel drive as they refer to it, adds another motor to the rear axle, and it's the same configuration that's in the e-all-wheel drive Blazer. So it's 288 horsepower total between the two motors, about 300 just under 300 foot-pounds of torque. With the front-wheel drive version, you know, this is not a car that's going to be challenging Teslas in drag races, but that's fine. It's quick enough, you know, do 0-60 in about 8 seconds. And it's more than anybody, it's all anybody really needs. You know, you will not have any problem, merging with highway traffic, you know, with the 213 horsepower. The all wheel drive definitely feels quicker. It's about 2 seconds quicker, 0-60. The interior of the Equinox is actually really nice. And in a lot of ways, I thought it was nicer than the Silverado, which costs, you know, 2.5 times as much. You know, we drove it quite a bit. They're launching with the 2LT, 3LT, and the RS trims. And the base 2LT starts at about 42,000. 42 and change, including delivery. And then the RS is, I think, about $1,000 more than that. Later this year, they will be adding a 1LT trim. That one is going to start at $35,000, before incentives. And this is because it's built in North America with US made battery. It is eligible for the full $7,500 tax credit. And you know, if you check with the dealers, you'll probably be able to find a dealer that will be able to do the point of sale tax credit. So, you know, if you're financing, which I think is probably what most people buying something like this will be doing, you can take that $7,500 off, you know, of your financing and save a lot of money on your loan and get much lower payments. So, you know, this thing will be, you know, it's $43,295 for the 2LT front wheel drive. So that'll get you to about $36,000, with the tax credit. So, you know, that's right in the heart of, you know, the market for most of these, you know, quote unquote compact crossovers, you know, that are actually a little bit smaller than this. So I actually really liked driving this thing. The steering feels really good. The ride quality was really good, you know, on those same Michigan roads where the Nismo Z was not pleasant. This was very pleasant to drive. we drove on a route that took us through a variety of parts of the city of Detroit, you know, starting in downtown Detroit, driving through quite a bit of Detroit, and then out to the suburbs in Grosse Pointe, and then up to Auburn Hills. It was fun. It was really good. You can get it with Super Cruise, So you can get the hands-free driving assist, although, you know, you don't really need it. But
I don't know. So the hands-free stuff, I'm like, oh, this is cool. All right, what do I do? Again, what do I do with my hands? Now my hands are just on the road, and I'm still watching the road. You know, you still have to watch the road. I'm like, it's a very weird,
Yeah. You know, it does, all of the Equinox trims come standard with the same displays that you get in that $100,000 Silverado RST. So you get the 11-inch digital instrument cluster, 17.7-inch infotainment display. The only downside, as we've talked about before, no CarPlay, no Android Auto. You know, it's the Google services that are built in there. And you get 8 years of connectivity for maps and assistant, 3 years of data connectivity for streaming apps. And then after that, you would have to pay for an OnStar subscription to keep using streaming apps.
The internet.
One thing you could do, if you didn't, after the 3 years, if you didn't want to pay for an OnStar package, is you could just use your phone and use the hotspot on your phone and stream, connect the car to your phone via Wi-Fi mm-hmm. and use the data plan that you're already paying for on your phone instead of paying OnStar for yet another data plan. The LT comes with 19-inch wheels, 21s on the RS. Again, just get the LT. Looks really good, especially the blue with the white top, the white roof, I think is a really great color combination. And the 19-inch wheels, you've got enough sidewall that, it's you still have nice, fairly comfortable ride, and it's not going to burst every time you hit a pothole. So I think the Equinox is actually a really great option that people, looking for an electric crossover, that is not too ridiculously expensive. Like I said, right, even the 2LT that you can get now, at that $36,000 price point, and then with the 1LT coming later in the year, that'll get 46. You down to, under 28. We start at 35, and then with the credit, you're down under 28,000. That's actually a really, really, and you get 319 miles of range. Mm-hmm. When you compare to most of the other electric crossovers, at the same starting price, in that low $40,000 range of the 2LT, on all the others, on the Aria, the Ioniq 5, the EV6, as much as we like the Ioniq 5, the EV6, at $40,000, roughly 40 grand, you're getting only about 220 miles of range.
Yeah.
This has got 100 miles more range. So this is an EV. If you want an EV crossover, this is one that I really think people should be considering.
Yeah.
It's the promise of Ultium finally realized.
Yeah.
Finally. Everyone loves this car. I haven't driven it yet. It looks cool. Again, I told Gia like a few weeks ago. I'm like, no one was ever excited about the Equinox until now.
Finally, people are excited. Like, yes. Like,
no one's ever been like, ooh, the Equinox up until you guys showed the EV version.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is definitely, I think, the best looking Equinox yet out of all the various generations. And I actually find it quite attractive.
It looks cool.
For what it is. Yeah.
It's a cool looking car. You get a lot of space. You get a lot of range. By the end of the year, which is only 6 months from now, you're going to get a $35,000 version, which, you get the $7,500 bucks off. You're getting an under $30,000 EV with 300 miles of range. I mean, over 300 miles range. So,
and unlike a certain other company that only makes EVs, GM is actually generally really good with their range estimates of, when they say, they say it's estimated at 319 miles of range, mm-hmm. you will almost certainly get that, in any normal driving conditions. I mean, obviously you're going to get less when it's really cold and things like that.
GM and Ford are usually spot on whenever I do the tests. They're just like, bam, within like a mile or two for both of those. So good for them. The Germans and the Koreans are a little bit, they under promise and over deliver, but there's a reason why the Germans do that.
Yep. And then if for some reason, you know, the styling of the Equinox EV doesn't, you like the mechanical aspects of it, but you're not thrilled with the styling and you want something that feels more luxurious, Cadillac's got you covered.
Bam.
They got the Optiq. Ed, they reiterated again, it's not Optiq, it's Optiq. All these EVs with the IQ, it's, yeah. Optiq. So Lyric, Optiq, Vistiq.
Then why do we have to make it a Q?
Optiq. Is this one going to be one of those things because where no one ever learns how to say it, like Taycan? Like, yes, no one Taycan. Knows how to say Taycan. Everyone says Taycan. It's Thai, like you're wearing a tie, and then a con, like a conference for ties. It's a Thai conference, Taycan. There you go. That's how you remember.
Not even that way, but that works.
Or confidence men always wear a tie. So you're going to get conned by a man wearing a tie, Taycan.
Okay. There you go.
That works.
That's what's going to happen. It's going to be the Optiq. Oh, the Optiq. No, it's the Optiq. And you're just going to – you can give up. You're just going to give up. That's – I've given up on Taycan. I've given up telling people how to say it.
Yeah. And to your question about why a Q, Nicole, because they probably could not get a trademark on Optiq spelled with a C.
Oh, it's too hard to – yeah. That
makes sense. Well, all their stuff has Qs.
And if they're going to put a Q, they should call it Optiq. Like, just Optiq. Go with it.
It's probably too French. They're like, nah.
Like, everyone's going to call the –
would you call it the Lyric?
We're going to call the Optiq the Optiq.
Optiq. Sorry. I've already called, now I don't remember how it's called. It's called the Cadillac Taycan.
So, you know, the Optiq, you know, is under the skin. You know, the mechanical bits are exactly the same as the Equinox. They're launching it only with the all-wheel drive system. So no front wheel drive for now. Although I suspect that at some point they will add a front wheel drive variant, but they're not right now. It's the same wheelbase, the same length, again, this is not necessarily to be considered a direct replacement for like the Cadillac XT4, which is considerably smaller. You know, just like the gas Equinox is smaller than the electric Equinox, this is actually about an inch longer than a Cadillac XT5, which is, you know, a midsize crossover. And it's, you know, a few inches shorter than a Lyric. But it's got the same battery, the same motors, but, you know, the Cadillac styling that we've seen on the Lyric. You know, very similar interior to the Lyric. You got a 33-inch curved LCD display in there. What do you think of the Optiq?
It's cool. I like it. I like the Lyric a lot. So I'm assuming they're going to do a good job on this.
Yeah, because I think it looks good.
The Lyric's good and the Equinox are good. You're going to work. You don't have to work really, really, really hard to make this bad. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying you have to work at it.
There's still an opportunity to screw up the software.
Yes.
Yes.
But
let's hope they get that right. Come on.
Yeah. The proportions on this, you know, are quite different from the Lyric. You know, it looks, you know, the greenhouse, the windshield is sloped back quite a bit more than on the Lyric. You know, so it looks a little shorter, looks a little smaller, sleeker. One element that, when I saw it was pretty interesting that they explained, if you look at the rear quarter windows, the D pillar area, there's this graphic on there, these stripes on there. And it turns out that those are actually, you know, it's not etched in the glass. It's a graphic, but it's actually applied in between the layers of the safety glass. So it's sandwiched that's inside. Cool. Mm-hmm. So it's never going to scrape off or anything like that.
Oh, that's nice.
It looks cool. Yeah. It's actually really striking. It's funny, as you brought that up, I was like, is that etched in the glass or is that like a sticker?
Well, that was what we first thought when we saw it. And we asked and they said, no, it's actually the graphic is embedded between the layers of glass. So.
That's pretty cool. It does look good.
Some bad lighting where you wouldn't saw this, wasn't there? I'm looking at your photos.
The lighting,
and The lighting in that room is horrible.
They do that all the time when they bring us, not Cadillac, like all of them. Let's bring you to see this vehicle. We're going to show it to you. And we're going to give you the worst, most craptastic lighting possible for your photos.
Occasionally, they'll have the big light box above the car with nice, cool, diffused lighting. But a lot of times, like, hey, we just threw up a bunch of lights like it's a rock concert. I'm like, that's not
and
how
that's
you'd light
they
a
did
car.
And, you can see they totally did that here.
Yeah, and they chose to have a red one there to show us, and it just did not work. The lighting did not work.
The lighting the color temperature is warm, so it's just going to make everything. Never mind.
And one thing first thing I looked for when I got inside the car was not that big 33-inch display. I looked at the vents, and guess what?
And
there's little handles that you can grab and move the vents.
See the little handles.
Ooh, yay.
You do not have to use the touchscreen to adjust the vents.
Oh, thank gosh. You know, it's funny that you say that because I was talking to somebody, a friend of ours, and she was complaining about her car. And what she didn't like about it is the last car she had to go in to change. She didn't like the number of things she had to go into the touchscreen for her climate controls made her nuts. She's like, I don't want to have to touch things. I want to just have buttons and knobs. And I'm like, yeah, we all agree with you. We're working on that. We're berating all the automakers. Just give us a little time.
Please stop this. Optic.
Yeah. All right.
Get along with everyone. Optic.
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 Cadillac Optic. And the Optic is coming out in fourth quarter of this year. So
cool.
in the fall, late fall.
So they're moving a lot of stuff. They're moving a lot of vehicles. 2025, I think six EVs. 2025, I think. Or no, yeah, the end of this year or something. I don't remember.
Well, let's see. They've got the Equinox, the Silverado consumer versions, the Cadillac, the Escalade IQ, the Optic, the Sierra. What else? That's one five.
One more.
What are we missing?
We have both trucks.
I don't know. There'll be something.
There's another one in there somewhere.
Something else.
Something we haven't been told about yet, I think. So anyway, yeah. So let's move on to another new luxury EV crossover, SUV, whatever, something like that. Jeep Wagoneer S. You saw it this week in New York, right, Nicole?
I did. They took us into New York and we got to see it live and in person in New York. They revealed the Wagoneer S and a concept version of the Wagoneer S Trailhawk that got all the Trailhawk beefy stuff you'd expect to go off road, but that's just a concept. But honestly, it looked like all they had to do is like, if we could finish this up, we can just put this in the market just like this. Like it looked like it was pretty close to what a production version would look like. It totally seemed to fit. Yeah, so we got a chance to see this. This is their first global EV for Jeep. They have the Avenger, but it's just in Europe. So this one
for now.
But this one comes out in the US and Canada and then rolls out to other places. It's intended to be a around the world version of this vehicle. 600 horsepower, 617 pound feet of torque. It moves 0-60 to 3.4. And it has, they're saying an estimated 300 plus miles of range. That could mean 301, could mean 330, but
300.25 miles.
300.25 miles of range. It looks really good. It was interesting. We talked to, in talking to people that behind Jeep, and they were about the design process and, you know, how they mess with the Jeep grill a little bit. Like it's still got the 11 slots, but it's like squinched down. And there's some, like, I think they call it cast lighting that has this beautiful impression, especially in the dark. Like you're going to be able to look. And they said that was sort of, they hope the goal. You'll start to know that, like, you know, this traditional 7 slot grill from Jeep, you'll see this one, especially at night, and immediately know it's a Jeep that's driving behind you. And it has this funky, if you look at the wing on the back, it's not solid. It's sort of split in the middle and it's very far out. You have to get the right angle in pictures to see that it's not close. It's really pretty far out there. So it has a nice design to it. I really liked it. They're doing it. It's just launch edition for now. More to come next year, I think. They didn't really say, you know, cannot comment on future product, blah, blah, blah. But if this, so that's your first one is this. So you can get it and you can order right now. You could put down, technically you're reserving it. You put down like $100 right now and you can reserve it and you pick out your colors. That's part of their thing too. There's not a lot. There's nothing to really customize on this. You're basically picking out, you have the launch edition and that's it. You're picking out your interior color, you're picking out your exterior color, and you're picking out which dealership you want to pick it up at. That's pretty much it. There's like nothing else to add on to this right now. And it comes in at just over $70,000. And it does have all the luxury kind of features that you'd expect. It has this one interior. There's either a black interior or they call it radar red. It looks really brilliantly bright red when you look at the images online. It's a little bit less cray cray when you see it in person, more muted. So it's not that like cherry red that it looks like when you see it. It's a little bit more reserved. It's a two row Wagoneer. It's not a three. It's definitely different proportions than the Wagoneer / Grand Wagoneer that you've been seeing.
It's actually closer to a Grand Cherokee than a Wagoneer.
Yeah, it's about more an inch shorter than a Grand Cherokee. Yeah, it's more Grand Cherokee sized, and especially when you see it, you're like, oh, that is not as big. If you have Wagoneer in your head, it's not that big. They say by the end of the year, these will be in production, so hopefully going into customer hands not long after. I think there was a lot to like there. I think the price point they're still intending it as a, you know, the Wagoneer are their luxury vehicles. So it's still intended to be a luxury vehicle. Decent range, decent power, great styling, you know, beautiful interior, has some of the off-road chops that you can, you know, I don't know who's going to take their Jeep Wagoneer off-road.
Launch edition is definitely not going off-road.
You wouldn't think.
Not with the tires and the ground clearance it's got.
Right.
That Trailhawk.
Trailhawk, if they make the Trailhawk, that could definitely, but still this has like the drive modes and stuff, you know, so technically you could if you're doing light off-roading, but I would not in a million years take this off-road. But I liked it. I really liked it. I think it's a neat car for Jeep. I think it's a neat way to try to bring in some new customers. They talked a lot about how the design team on this skewed very, very young because they were trying to appeal to younger demographic. Like, let's have people who are young and think, let's have them design what a cool car is since we want them to think it's cool. Let's not have a bunch of, you know, 55-year-olds design what they think is cool. So I think it's a great vehicle. I don't know how well received it'll be just because of EVs right now. Like, it's expensive. It still gets a tax credit and all that, but it's still not cheap. So what do you guys think?
You know, at the $72,000 price point, including delivery, you know, it's actually quite a bit cheaper than a lot of other premium brand EVs. You know, mm-hmm. it's in the same ballpark as, you know, as a higher end Lyriq, you know, more well-equipped Lyriq. But, you know, if you compare it to, say, an Audi e-tron, Q8 e-tron, or Mercedes EQE, mm-hmm. Things like that. It is substantially cheaper than those.
And this is the launch edition. This is the most expensive one. This is the $72,000 launch edition. So we're probably looking at 65, maybe 62.
Right. So if you don't want the launch edition, if you want to hold off, you can probably get this for a little less. Whenever they decide to tell us what the other stuff that's coming sometime, they have no idea when they'll tell the other trims or what the other trims will actually be. But I mean, it looks great. It looks really good.
I would expect, you know, especially given what we've seen from Jeep in recent months since Antonio Filosa took over the brand, you know, they've cut prices on most of their models substantially, mm-hmm. by many thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that they're pricing this launch edition at, you know, 70 grand, you know, I would expect, you know, by this time next year, there will be versions of the Wagoneer S that you can get that will be under $60,000.
I would think.
Yeah, you know, for
that's pretty. And that's,
you this know. Thing does have like there is everything. It's got like their 19 speaker, you know, Macintosh audio, all the leather trims. I mean, there's when you look inside, it's got all the screens. Like it's got the the instrument cluster, the infotainment screen, the passenger screen, and then there's the screen below the infotainment that is just the HVAC controls. I mean, it's just, it has all the high tech, high style, fancy looks. It's not like you're getting into a cheap Wrangler. It looks like a luxury car inside. So
it has that Macintosh audio system, which is fantastic. Oh, I don't care about that stupid second screen.
I want to care about it. And they're not like,
you always want to like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then the person just starts using their phone.
Right. And I've watched Russ do it. It's like, he's like, this is really cool. He plays with it. Next thing you know, he's just on his phone. I'm like, it's cool for the first 3 seconds. You're like, oh, yeah. I got my own screen.
But seeing those blue VU meters, on your screen.
That Macintosh audio, though,
it does sound good.
So good. Mm-hmm. I was like, I was bringing people in the car. Come here. Are we driving? No. We're not going anywhere.
Not going anywhere. We're just going to
listen. Just listen. Did you get to go to the Macintosh house?
I did not, unfortunately, because I was interviewing Bill Peffer, the guy who is the guy. He's the head of Jeep brand now. And
head of Jeep for North America.
North America. And then Ralph's name's last name wrong.
Gilles.
I always say it wrong. I interviewed Ralph. So I was talking to them. So I was kind of hanging out at the spot where they introduced it so that I would have time to talk to those guys. So I didn't get a chance. And I flew in the morning and flew out in the afternoon. So it was like, boom, boom, boom. I was in New York for like 5 minutes. And I spent more time in traffic, I think, than actually at the Jeep thing.
you got to take the subway. They're like, we'll send a car. And I'm like, can you just give me 20 bucks?
You have to send a car.
Well, except you can't. There's no subway to LaGuardia.
Oh, you were just flying to LaGuardia?
I think it was LGA, yes. They just redid that window.
You got to take a bus to the...
Yeah. But either way, I didn't get a chance to go and to listen to it, but I know that they've been doing these. They did Macintosh in this isn't the first Macintosh.
Yeah, the Wagoneer was the first one to get.
Right. And then it sounds Cherokee. Fabulous in that. So I have no doubt it's going to sound just as amazing in this. It's a fabulous audio system. I kind of want one of these guys.
Yeah. Well, I was
talking about red interior.
I was talking with Stephanie Brindley yesterday, and she was there on Thursday as well. And she did go to the Macintosh house.
Yeah.
So it's this house that in Manhattan that Macintosh Labs has leased, and they've set up all the rooms in this house with various different Macintosh audio systems at various price points that are all way too expensive, including one, the highest of high-end rooms, the audio system in there supposedly cost $1 million.
I can believe it because when we did the Genesis GV80 launch a few weeks back, they don't have Macintosh. I forgot who they have. Is it Bose?
No.
Oh my God. Whoever they have. They had, oh my gosh, I've forgotten, but they had those people on site to talk about their audio.
See how useful it is to have these branded audio systems?
I just am drawing a blank, but they had their audio folks on site and they had some examples of their audio systems. They had these beautiful speakers that had like these wooden slats that kind of went and kind of opened. So it looked like a piece of artwork until they became speakers and then they revealed the speakers and they weren't listening, went and became a little, and they were maybe like 4 or 5 feet tall. And she's like, oh, these are, you get a couple of these that you could spend like $1 million. I'm like, could you? Okay. So
the return on the higher you go, you get less and less return, the more money you get. Once you get past like $500, your return on the money you're spending becomes less and less and less and less and less. Like I've listened to it like music on a $20,000 like system. And it sounds like you're in the room with the band playing the song. You can hear their fingers on the guitar strings. And you know what? It's $20,000. So it's like, do I really need to hear that? I think I'm okay.
And I've been to enough. I went to enough rock concerts as a younger person that I know that I can no longer fully appreciate an audio system worth more than a few thousand.
That's the rub, is the only people who can afford this are people who are older. But if you're older, A, you're going to lose that high end of your hearing. B, a lot of us went to concerts. That's why we love music. So now, I mean, my hearing, like one ear hears way better than the other just because of where I am on stage. And so, yeah. And I have a lot of earplugs. I mean, a lot of earplugs. And you know what I do when I go to the show? Like 5 minutes before I show up, I'm like, oh, I forgot my earplugs. Everything. I have fancy ones that like only cut down the decibel. They don't actually muffle the noise. No, they're all at home.
And you know, when I went to shows, you know, in my teens and 20s, pretty much in teens and 20s, you know, it's like at that time, you know, this was 30 years ago, 40 years ago. You know, it's like nobody wore earplugs to concerts.
Never. Yeah. You just like made yourself deaf.
So yeah. I can still hear those concerts, you know, with the ringing.
By the way, it's a Bang & Olufsen system in the Genesis GV80. I had to look it up. I'm like, what the heck was it? I was drawing a blank. So
I've been to 4 Motorhead concerts, so I'm technically deaf.
I haven't been to Motorhead, but I've been to AC/DC and you know, and enough local bar bands, you know, in Toronto when I was growing up that
what?
Exactly. I always have to lean in conversations. Yeah. Okay. So the Wagoneer S looks very promising for Jeep. And I guess in some interviews this week, I don't know if it was, I can't remember if it was Filosa or Carlos Tavares said that they will be bringing a $25,000 GPV to the North American market. From what I'm hearing, it's not going to be the Avenger or maybe something like the Avenger, but they're going to bring a $25,000 EV to the North American market.
Like a little Jimny? Oh, man.
Maybe.
But like a VF3, like just like ha, suck it, VinFast. Hey. They brought like a tiny little Jimny. Oh, people lose their minds.
More competition in that market. Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's get some cheap, but not cheap, inexpensive cars into the hands of people who are like, these are too pricey. Yeah.
Speaking of inexpensive cars, how do you guys feel about K cars? And I'm not talking about
love them.
Late 70s, early 80s Chrysler vehicles.
They're ridiculous. They just sort of go. They're like little tanks.
That's a good description.
Just drive them, and then they run into things and just keep going. They're like pinballs. and then one day they just rust away into dust and they disappear into the universe.
And then you get another one.
And you get another one.
I'm trying to think of a good analogy. Yeah. They're like a band that you like. It's not a great band, but it's a good enough band. And then one day they just explode.
So, you know, the K car, for those not familiar with it, you know, is a class of vehicles in Japan that are, you know, there's some strict limitations on it in terms of overall size. You know, they're not allowed to have more than 66 horsepower. 660 cc engines
I thought we were talking about American K cars. This is a completely different thing. I thought you were talking about the Dodge Dart.
No, that's why I said not the the Chrysler vehicles of the late 70s.
I heard 80s. See, that's because I can't hear very well. You have to like
but everything you said applies equally well to these Japanese K cars.
They're little durable little machines though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they're obviously not built to US safety standards, but, ever since, you know, they changed some rules, I don't know, like 15 years ago to allow importation of vehicles that don't meet US regulations, as long as they're more than 25 years old. You know, they've become quite popular, in the US, and, you know, there's a bunch of people that have them. My friend Mike Austin has a Honda Beat, which is a little mid-engine convertible that happens to be a K car.
He let me drive it. It was cool.
I'm shocked you could even fit in it.
I fit in it. That's all that mattered.
Barely.
And there's a lot of really interesting ones, but a bunch of states are trying to ban them. You know, started with somewhere in
New York,
New England. Was it New York?
Yep.
Were they the first ones? Yeah, started revoking registrations on K cars. You know, the latest is Rhode Island. You know, there's a bunch of others now that have done this. So what do you think? Should they be doing this, or should they just, I mean, it's not like there's millions of these things on the road in the United States.
It's such a weird thing for them to go after.
That's another thing.
They're not fast. They're not necessarily quick vehicles. No one's like blazing down the freeway. Most people who buy them are enthusiasts who understand what they're buying. There was horribly, there was an article, I think, in the New York Times or Washington Post about farmers buying them and using them around the farm. And I'm saying horribly because that means it's going to make them more expensive for people like me who've been wanting to buy one. So now that the masses know about it, like, oh, no, this is going to. But yeah, they're not fast. Are they, you know,
if you have 66 horsepower.
Yeah, where are you
going? How fast can they go? Not very.
So when I went to Japan, I set up my Facebook Marketplace to look at Japan while I was there. And guess what? When I came back, my Facebook Marketplace, because Facebook is broken, it's fundamentally broken. It still thinks I'm in Japan on all of my devices. So it shows me K trucks and K vans nonstop all day, every day. And I'm like, oh, I got to get one of these home. But I don't understand, like, oh, hey, they're nice little utility vehicles. They're 25 years old. So if I bought a 25-year-old, you know, Dodge Neon, that's a death trap.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't. It's such a weird thing to sort of like, this is what we're gonna pick on. We're gonna pick on these little weird trucks.
I mean, there's way more Teslas with, you know, running, you know, broken full self driving software and autopilot than there are ever going to be K cars.
Yeah, it's such a weird. I don't understand.
It's a strange thing to fixate on. Like, why did this become someone's thing? Like,
it's because someone saw it in the news. It was the New York Times or the Washington Post. They wrote the article. Somebody saw it. Like, how dare these people buy something that they're never going to drive on the freeway if they know better, if they know any better.
They have a death wish.
Yeah. And people are like, well, they're not as safe. I'm like, you know, I ride a motorcycle.
Right.
And again, there's such a small amount. Like, what's this article? 30. There are 30 in the state of road. I mean, Rhode Island's a small state, but there's 30 of them. So they're going after 30 people for this vehicle that, A, it's not pretending to be self-driving. It doesn't even, they don't have screens in them, so you have to pay attention. Most of them are manual transmission. So it's a person who's paying attention to the act of driving when you buy these little vehicles. And you bought it because A, it's cool, but B, you can just put stuff in it. It's literally,
especially the trucks, you know, and the vans, the Honda Acty, you know, the TFL guys have one out at their ranch in Colorado. They've got an Acty, but they can't register it in Colorado, so they can't drive it on the road, but they just use it on the ranch.
There you go.
Drive it around the ranch. No, I want a van for the dogs.
Yeah.
You put the back seats down, it's flat. It's just a big, flat, tall. It's great for the dogs. It's great for runs to Home Depot. I can buy so much mulch with it.
The mulch.
Just think of the mulch. I'm not drag racing it. I will probably take it on the freeway for maybe one or two stops before getting off.
For as short a time as you possibly can.
I'm not flying around on this thing. I'm trying to figure out how to get one over here. I got a cousin who works in shipping. I think they're just like, oh, we got to think of people because people are going to buy these. And it's going to be unsafe. And they're going to be on the road because they're very small and Americans have big, giant trucks and Americans, you know, we're going to run them down and we're going to get in trouble because we said it was okay. I don't know. Someone needs it. I guess someone walked into a room and said, think about the children. And they're like, boom, we're going to ban these.
We're thinking about the children. We can't do it.
Well, you mentioned manual transmissions. I know I'm a fan of manual transmissions. Every car I've ever owned that's been primarily my car has, you know, over the last almost 40 years has been a manual transmission. Now, you know, you've all spent time perusing Bring a Trailer and Cars and Bids and other sites that, you know, some of the outrageously overpriced cars being put up for auction there. Well, now there's a new auction site called rowyourown.com.
Row Your Own.
And they have a unique aspect to them that is different from all those other sites. You can only sell cars on Row Your Own that have a manual transmission. If it's got an automatic, sorry, you'll have to go somewhere else.
Okay, so here's the thing. If I'm looking at a car on an auction site, it damn well better have a manual transmission. If I'm looking like, oh, look at this. Oh, this is pretty. Oh, come on. That's what happens when I see that it has an automatic.
It has an automatic. You're already out. So this is the perfect site for you then. You don't have to worry about that.
It is. So
there's, you know, it's new. There's no active auctions right at the moment. But looking at the list of some of the recent auctions, there was a 1998 Acura Integra Type R four-door. It was bid to $13,500. Looks like it didn't sell, didn't meet the reserve. There was a 2007 S2000 with 35,000 miles and the factory hardtop went for $50,250. Wow. That is nuts. There was a 1997 BMW M3, E36 M3, sold for $20,470. Ooh, that's a bargain for an M3.
Are we podcasting now or are you guys just shopping? What's happened here?
Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, well, if you
growyourown.com.
they don't have anything for sale now, but eventually.
Yeah. Hopefully.
They got some stuff.
A new car that was announced this week that you can't get with a manual transmission, sadly, is the 2025 Porsche 911 GTS Hybrid.
Dun, dun,
the first production 911 hybrid.
Ooh, are we happy about this or are we sad about this?
Sure.
I'm fine with it.
I'm fine with it because I still believe that as soon as the Taycan came out, every automaker got one, and then their chassis, and then they went to their chassis person and they're like, hey, you know that sort of janky EV chassis you were working on?
It's not gonna make it more like this.
Make it more like this. Yeah. So I think if anyone's gonna be able to pull this off, it's those wacky Porsche engineers. And I don't think any of them are wacky, to be honest.
There's some really interesting aspects of this thing. So there's the electric motor that's embedded in the transmission. So it's an 8-speed dual clutch transmission. It's not embedded in the transmission. The electric motor is actually at the front axle, kind of like the 911 GT3R hybrid that they raced back in 2010, 2011. So electric motor on the front axle. And they're calling this thing the T-hybrid. And the battery is also mounted up front, but just in front of the firewall. And it's a lithium ion battery. And it's a very compact battery, surprisingly compact battery. And then, in addition to doing regenerative braking, they also have an electric motor on the turbocharger. So there's a single, electric turbo on the 3.6 liter, flat six. And so it's a system that's actually kind of like what they have on Formula One cars now, where there's an electric motor on the shaft in between the turbine and the compressor of the turbo. So it can spin it up faster when you step on the accelerator and get you instant boost. And then when you're cruising, not using the boost, the exhaust gases going through the turbine are spinning the motor and putting energy back into the battery. So it's using the heat energy from the exhaust stream to charge the battery so that you have instant acceleration when you need it.
Take that, turbo lag.
Yeah. they've also got active aerodynamics. So they've got these shutters in the front, the lower front corners that when you don't need cooling air, these things close off and give you better, you know, lower drag, and then they can open up as needed. It's pretty cool. It's also
pretty sweet.
Ridiculous.
It is pretty cool.
And there's like how many variants? Let me see. 12 variants.
0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds.
Yeah, they're going to sell every one of these variants to a lot of people, and then they will come out with 12 others that they will also be able to sell, and all of it's paid for by Macans and Cayennes. Mm-hmm. So every time you sit there and complain about Porsche SUVs, remember, they're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 911 careers. 12 911s, 2025 911 coming out for 2025.
The Carrera 4 GTS, which is the hybrid, starts at $164,900.
Oh, it's a bargain.
Yeah, that's nothing.
It's cheap.
Again, I remember as a kid, everyone's like, "Oh, Porsches are just Volkswagens with, you know, with better style." I'm from a small town where we use small words. But the first time I got behind the wheel of Porsche, I'm like, "Oh, this is what you're paying for." Like within 30 seconds, you're like, "Oh, yeah, this is worth this much money." Yeah, sure. There you go. I mean, I don't have that money, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
All right. One last one before we answer a couple of listener questions. The Geneva Motor Show. It's dead. It's been canceled indefinitely.
It was my favorite motor show because you could see the whole motor show from like one spot.
It was one big hall.
One big hall. They had a lot of ridiculous supercars that were only four of them in the entire world. And two of them were there. And the other two were owned by the owner of the company. And everyone had to like just their booths were just tiny. Like, here's the one car we're showing. That's it. I'm going to miss the Geneva show. But then last year, there was the Geneva show. And where was it?
In Qatar. And they are going to do that. So they're going to, you know, it's called the Geneva show, but it's in Qatar. The next one is going to be in the fall of 2025. But the actual Geneva show is dead.
Yeah. Oh well. It was a good show. Wow.
It was good while it lasted. But
it was my favorite show because I didn't have to walk so far.
Yeah.
No.
And it was very focused. You couldn't like mess around. You had to be. This is the car we're showing. That's it.
That's it. Focus, people. Figure it out.
It ran from 1905. Yeah. Until 2019.
1905. Was it really that long?
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember the last show. They were canceling it as people were flying out. They're like, I don't know. Yeah,
because the Geneva show was always, in the first couple of weeks of March, and in 2020,
that wasn't a good idea.
Right, just as they were getting ready for the Geneva show, there's a global pandemic.
Whoopsie.
Yeah.
But they were really like, just sort of like, well, and it was like, I can't believe they're not canceled.
I think they waited until like 3 days before the show was supposed
to.
Like yeah. Yeah, it was really close. There were some people I know that were already there, like not at the show, but had already flown over. They're like, well, we're here now. Let's hang out for a little bit and then get out of Dodge. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's answer a couple of listener questions. Let me find them here. I didn't have a chance to put them in the rundown. First up, Dale Schmidt, it's an email, title Electric Vehicles. Hey guys, love the podcast. Vehicle Insights. Like you, I adjust my vents all the time, so I look for that. Thank you, Dale. We appreciate
that.
Mm-hmm. I've listened quite a while and have a question that I don't think you've addressed in an episode. I live in Wisconsin, which is not too unlike Michigan. I'm looking at an EV to lease to get a feel for electric and whether I would own one. The question I have is rear-wheel drive EVs handling in snowy conditions. With the added battery weight, do they handle better or is all-wheel drive best? It seems rear-wheel drive gets better range, but the better lease deals are on the lower-end models. Thank you for your time.
If you are fine with swapping out them wheels, or those tires, you'll be fine. Just get some Blazaks or whatever.
I would say the same thing. Just swap out your tires during the cold weather.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
And you know what? I just leased the Ioniq 5 like 2 days ago. And they made me sign. They made us sign something that we wouldn't put snow chains on our car, which I would never do that anyway because I'm like, no.
Why would they make you sign? What happens if you
I think people put snow chains on the car and just destroy the cars, the leases. And because it's technically not mine.
I got it. I'm renting it for a few years.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They made me sign a thing that I wouldn't put chains on a car, which by the way, again, no, I wouldn't.
Wouldn't anyway.
I've only put chains on one car because my friend was driving. I'm like, yeah, I guess we'll do this now.
One thing to be wary of, Dale does mention, the better lease deals are on lower end models. Often as we mentioned earlier with the Equinox, often the lower end models are actually, have smaller batteries. So they have shorter range to begin with. And, you know, Wisconsin, you do get winter. And, you know, so if you're looking at something like, you know, the base Ioniq 5, which has only got, I think, 220 miles of range, 225, something like that, or a VW ID4, you know, or a Nissan Ariya, you know, they're all in the low 200 mile range. When it gets cold, you are going to have less range. And then, you know, cold and, you know, driving in snow, you're going to have less range. So you might, in Wisconsin, you might not want to go for the low, low end. At least get one with the larger battery. But definitely, you know, go with the rear wheel drive and just put winter tires on there.
Yeah. There's some crazy deals for Hunt. Well, it ends tomorrow, which is before this is, is going to be aired.
Never mind.
I don't know. June 3rd. Like, that's how we got our Ioniq 5, like, stupid cheap.
All right. Next, the last one we have is from Sean Whitehurst, who we've heard from before. We haven't heard from you in a while, Sean. Thanks, man. Greetings, crew. I wrote about a year ago about charging EVs in Europe, where you provide the cable. I took pictures this time, and I'll include a link to this in the show notes. And it looks like you need a special cable with charging connections on both sides. EVs keep coming up as rental options, and more hotels and cities have outlets like these. The picture that he's got is showing a CCS connector. So it's not a the European the Type 2 CCS connector, mm-hmm. which is the same. It's designed for, it's based on what we have here, but it's designed for a three phase circuit rather than a single phase circuit. They do have, you know, there are cables available for this. You can buy the cables. I'm suspicious if your rental company would provide the right cable or not. It's a good question. You know, if you are renting a car in Europe, if you're traveling to Europe and renting a car, you know, if you're thinking about getting an EV, which is probably not a bad idea because fuel prices are much, much, much higher in Europe, consider an EV. There's a lot more public charging over there. But, you know, make sure, you know, check with the rental company and make sure you can get a cable. Because if you can do that, then, you know, these are level two chargers that you find, you know, they're curbside chargers. And, you know, in some places they also have them installed in like light poles and things like that, because it's easy, you know, and they don't have, they're relying on you bringing your own cable, you don't have the cables lying on the ground. So it's basically, you know, kind of like having a parking meter, you know, on the curb.
We have the plug-in hybrid while I was there, and there was a cable just tucked in the back.
Okay. So there you go.
It just came with one. It was all nice and packaged up and all pretty. So
yeah. And you didn't even use it.
I did.
Oh, did you?
I did use it.
Oh, okay.
Yes. This is when she was in Europe. Not
yeah. Well, I was not that. Yeah. So it wasn't that long ago. Not the Texas Lexus that I had there. The one that I had 2 months ago. So.
Okay. So that's it. I do have one other brief rant that I want to add in before we let Nicole go to bed, because she's got to get up stupid early.
Get up at 3 o'clock. Rant quickly.
It is a quick rant. I just want to complain to all the tire manufacturers.
Oh.
Why have you stopped making 15-inch summer performance tires? You know, or anything less than, you know, 16 or 17 inches. You know, some of us have older cars that cannot accommodate those big giant honking wheels. And, you know, I was trying to buy tires for my Miata, and the BF Goodrich tires that were on there have been discontinued in the 15 inch size. My local tire stores didn't have any 15 inch performance tires available. Everything's been discontinued. I looked at the websites for Bridgestone, Pirelli, Michelin, Goodyear, Continental. All of them have dropped all their smaller performance tires. All they have is big tires now. So I did manage to find a set of Yokohama Advan V701s at Tire Rack. They still have them in stock. Had them delivered.
Go Tire Rack. And
took them over to my local discount tire store, which owns Tire Rack, and they put them on for me, and it's all good. But
yay!
See, Yokohama is what you're saying.
I wish the tire companies would, you know, keep offering some smaller tires, because there's still a lot of older cars on the road.
Bridgestone builds. I mean, they don't do any
15s.
But they're a Japanese company.
But they don't do any 15s. They've dropped them all.
Maybe they only do it because there's 15s in Japan. I guess maybe they just don't do it for America. They're like, forget it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my rant. So that's it for this week. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Next time.
Bye.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.